Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Jill Robbins, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Marcia James. Later, we will bring you this week's education report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
German police have released a man they arrested shortly after a deadly truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin. Officials said there was not enough evidence to link the suspect to the attack Monday that killed 12 people and injured nearly 50. The truck crashed into the holiday market and continued for about 60 meters before coming to a stop. Witnesses said they saw a man fleeing from the truck after the attack. Police said the suspect matched descriptions of the man running away, but they said earlier Tuesday they were not sure if the man arrested was actually the attacker. Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière said the suspect was a Pakistani citizen. He entered Germany as a migrant on December 31st last year and arrived in Berlin in February. The head of Germany's Federal Criminal Police Force said the man denied involvement in the attack. Officials said they were working with limited evidence. Police said they had not yet found a weapon believed to have been used to kill the driver of the truck before it was stolen. The owner of the truck said he believed the vehicle may have been hijacked. The Polish driver of the truck was found dead in the vehicle's passenger seat. German officials said the investigation is ongoing and have warned the public that the suspect has not been caught. They urged people to watch out for and report suspicious movements or behavior. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said officials have to assume that Monday's truck attack on the Christmas market was an act of terrorism. Interior Minister de Maizière also said there was no doubt the driver intentionally hit the popular market. Merkel and other senior German officials went to the area of the attack Tuesday. They spoke with police officers at the market and left flowers to honor the victims. Later, Merkel and German President Joachim Gauck also attended a memorial service at the church nearby. On Tuesday, the terror group Islamic State said the person who carried out the attack did so in response to calls for violence targeting citizens of what it called crusader nations. The attack came less than a month after the U.S. State Department warned that extremist groups, including Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, might carry out holiday attacks in Europe. IS and Al-Qaeda have both called on followers to use trucks to attack crowds. Monday's truck attack was similar to one that took place on July 14th in southern France. In that case, a truck crashed into a celebration in the French city of Nice, killing 86 people on France's Bastille Day holiday. IS claimed responsibility for that attack, which was carried out by a Tunisian national living in France. I'm Brian Lynn.
Some refugee aid organizations in the United States are working to help people who fled Syria and will soon come to America. The groups are working hard because they believe that President-elect Donald Trump may stop Syrian refugees from entering the United States when he takes office. During the presidential campaign, then-candidate Trump criticized American government policies that let Syrian refugees enter the United States. The small city of Rutland, in the northeastern state of Vermont, will be one of the first American cities to receive Syrian refugees in 2017. About 16,000 people live in Rutland. VOA recently visited a refugee aid group in the city.
So these just arrived.
In a room at a church, Marsha Castle is opening a box full of homemade hats. The people who made and sent the hats also sent a card.
We've knitted these hats with love and hope that they help your heads and hearts feel warm.
Marsha's organization is called Rutland Welcomes. Volunteers have donated household goods, furniture, and clothing to help the Syrian families who are to arrive early next year.
We have some really active volunteers, about 200 volunteers, who are willing to step up to provide transportation, to set up houses, to collect household goods and furniture, to do tutoring.
Italian, Greek, and Polish immigrants built Rutland. More than 100 years ago, there were many factories in the city. But today, its economy is poor, and businesses cannot find the workers they need. Mayor Christopher Lauris showed VOA a very old photograph of factory workers in the city.
Look around them. There's a lot of short, undersized guys with dark skin working in that factory.
In memory of the immigrants who built Rutland, Lauris created a plan to bring 100 Syrian refugees to the city each year for the next several years.
We saw refugee resettlement as an opportunity not only to do the right thing, the compassionate and humanitarian thing, but also from a very self-serving perspective as a community, provide population growth to fill our jobs.
But not everyone agrees with the mayor's plan. City Treasurer Wendy Wilton says the city does not have enough money to support 100 refugees a year.
When I add refugee resettlement and its impacts on education and on community development and planning, it looked to me like it would be a 35% tax increase for Rutland City residents. That's a lot of money.
Mayor Lauris says Wilton's estimate is not correct.
The numbers were frankly fabricated, not just on the municipal budget side, but on the school side as well. And it's unfortunate that she chose to use such erroneous numbers.
Some city legislators are also unhappy with the mayor's plan. Sharon Davis says the mayor never talked about his plan with city officials or the community.
And I think if the mayor had taken the opportunity to respect and support the folks that he represents, we wouldn't be in this discussion at this time.
Although not everyone supports the plan, The first refugees are expected to arrive in Rutland in early January. I'm Jill Robbins.
The Republican Party now holds more power in the United States than at any time since the 1920s. Since 2000, the Republicans have sharply increased the number of legislatures and governorships they control. That is part of a movement that began in 1938. Since then, the number of Republican state lawmakers has increased more than 64%. The party's influence at the state and national level has continued to rise since President Barack Obama took office in 2009. Because of the 2016 elections, Republicans will control Kentucky's House of Representatives and the Iowa and Minnesota Senates, beginning in January. In addition, the top Democrat in the Kentucky House, Greg Stumbo, and the top Democrat in the Iowa Senate, Mike Gronstall, were both defeated for re-election. Gronstall is also the president of the National Conference of State Legislatures. The Democratic Party had controlled Kentucky's House for 94 years. It was the last legislative chamber under the Democrats' control in the South. In January, there will be 64 Republicans in the 100-seat Kentucky House. The NCSL reports that Republicans will soon control both chambers of the legislature in 32 states, the most in the party's history. Democrats will control both chambers in 15 states. Control will be split in 3 states. Before the election, Republicans controlled both parts of the legislature in 30 states. Democrats controlled both in 12 states, while control was split in 7 states. One state, Nebraska, has a unicameral legislature. In other words, it has just one chamber, not a House and Senate. NCSL researcher Tim Story told DailySignal.com that Republicans have taken full advantage of their power in the states, including implementing tax cuts in a number of places, imposing stricter limits on abortion and voting rights, and combating controversial issues like gun control. While Democrats attempted to keep control of the presidency, Republicans worked at the state and local levels. That work has helped the party take control of a large majority of state offices. The Washington Post newspaper said that, with this election, Republicans cemented their dominance. The paper added that about 80% of Americans now live in a state either totally or partially controlled by Republicans. Amy Walter is the national editor of the Cook Political Report. She said that because of the recent elections, Democrats are going to be hurting for a long time. This month, Democrats got even more bad news. In the state of Louisiana, the Republican state treasurer John Kennedy won election to the U.S. Senate. President-elect Donald Trump campaigned for Kennedy. a large majority of voters in Louisiana supported Trump in the November election. Kennedy strongly opposes the health care program known as Obamacare. He supports the Second Amendment to the Constitution, which gives Americans the right to own guns. And he opposes abortion, the medical operation in which a woman's pregnancy is ended. In January, Republicans will hold 52 seats in the U.S. Senate. Democrats will control 46. There are two independent senators. They usually vote with the Democrats. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The United States has lost millions of manufacturing jobs in recent years. Some American businesses have turned to robots or other machines to do manufacturing work once performed by humans. Trade agreements are believed to be another reason for the job loss. Most of these positions no longer exist. That leaves many Americans unemployed or in jobs with low pay and little chance for better wages. At the same time, some companies say they have good-paying jobs, but cannot find workers with the skills needed to perform them. Many companies in other countries have apprenticeship programs to train workers, but most American companies do not. Apprenticeships often combine classroom training with practical work experience. Over a few years, a worker slowly gains the skills needed to perform complex jobs. But a large American company is using apprenticeships to develop a high-tech workforce. That company is Newport News Shipbuilding in the eastern state of Virginia. Jordan Lacey is in the first year of his apprenticeship at Newport News Shipbuilding. He is joining parts of a nuclear-powered attack submarine.
It starts as a pile of pieces, and when it leaves, it's a finished unit.
Lacey has also helped build a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Newport News Shipbuilding has been training apprentices for almost 100 years in the many skills needed to build modern warships.
How about a machinist? What's a machinist do?
Lacey is also learning other skills in class. He works in the company's shipyard a few days a week, then attends classes. He wants to learn how to design ships, not just assemble them. The apprentice school at Newport News Shipbuilding has more than 700 students. They are all receiving wages from the company. In other words, they are being paid to learn. Everett Jordan started as an apprentice. He is now the school's director of education.
I think it's an education with a purpose, really.
Jordan says combining classroom education and work-related training creates the workers the company needs.
That graduate has been down in the tanks, the bowels of these ships. They know these complex piping assemblies. They know what it takes to be a test electrician. They've done it, and they have that experience that they would take with them the rest of their career.
Edward Alden has written a book called Failure to Adjust. It tells about problems in the American workforce. He says apprenticeships are more common in Germany, Denmark, and other countries than the United States.
Apprenticeships are essentially an investment by companies in their future and in the future of their communities. And we saw over the decade of the 2000s a 40% decline in apprenticeships being offered by private companies.
Everett Jordan says apprenticeships could help many Americans who once work in manufacturing positions. His school offers 19 basic programs and many advanced classes for workers who show strong skills and ability. Elise Felt is one of his students.
I love what I do, and I think that the best part about it is the problem solving and having to learn and understand so much of what I'm getting into.
The shipyard has about 20,000 workers. 3,000 of them attended the apprentice school. I'm Marcia James.
Like other top officials in the administration of President Barack Obama, Education Secretary John King will leave government on January 20th. King gave a speech last week talking about his hopes for education programs after Obama's term ends. He said, "Americans should continue to work for schools with students and teachers who represent America's different races, religions, and ethnic groups. I am convinced that the growing conflicts in this country over race and religion and language would be profoundly reduced if our citizens were able to learn and play alongside classmates who were different from themselves," King said. President-elect Donald Trump replaces Obama on January 20th. He has named Michigan's Betsy DeVos to replace King. "Under her leadership, we will reform the U.S. education system and break the bureaucracy that is holding our children back so that we can deliver world-class education and school choice to all families," Trump said.
DeVos is a supporter of charter schools. They are schools that can experiment more because they operate independently of local school boards. She also supports taxpayer money for vouchers that parents can use to pay for private school. DeVos and other Republicans say vouchers allow parents in poor communities to move their children out of failing public schools. She has said they are likely to find a better learning environment in a good private school. President Obama has supported charter schools, but not private school vouchers. Obama said he looked at studies about private school voucher programs in Washington, D.C., and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. As a general proposition, vouchers has not significantly improved the performance of kids
that are in these poorest communities, Obama told Fox News in 2014.
Education policies have long divided Americans. Republicans generally support less federal control over schools, preferring to let local officials have more control. Democrats generally support keeping a strong federal education department to ensure that school districts treat all students fairly. In his speech, King said, "All sides should unite behind a simple goal, building a strong and fair public education system." He said, "The education department should continue to fight for better schools for all Americans." DeVos has not said how she might change Obama's and King's education policies. These policies include the education department's efforts to limit physical punishment of students, such as hitting. Obama's education department reported that minority students are more likely to get physical punishment than whites. King and the education department also ordered stronger regulations of for-profit colleges. The department found some for-profit schools charged high fees, leaving students with large loans to pay off. In many cases, King said, students did not get a good education.
Some large for-profit schools have closed down because of the Obama administration's enforcement efforts. Last month, the Career Education Colleges and Universities Association said for-profit colleges are ready to educate 5 million career professionals. It put out a statement from former U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Newt Gingrich calling on the federal government to stop targeting for-profit colleges. Gingrich was an early supporter of Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Instead of fighting for-profit colleges, Gingrich said the government should work with the schools to help Americans develop skills needed for good jobs and better pay. DeVos is a wealthy Republican from the Midwestern state of Michigan. She is chair of the American Federation for Children. The group supports vouchers and charter schools. The Conservative Heritage Foundation praised the choice of DeVos as Education Secretary.
Betsy DeVos has been a staunch supporter of more education choices for students and parents, and the school choice movement will have a champion in the Education Department, said the Heritage Foundation's Marguerite Bowling. Randy Weingarten is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. He said the choice of DeVos meant that Trump does not support public education in the U.S. In nominating DeVos, Trump makes it loud and clear that his education policy will focus on privatizing, defunding, and destroying public education in America, Weingarten said. The Department of Education has 4,400 employees and a yearly budget of $68 billion. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.